part, I will talk about recently research on MOS2 and the silicon and the topological interlayer. So this is in 1908 when Onnes developed a technique to fluidify helium, and he can get fluid helium at 4 Kelvin, and he found anomaly at 2.2 Kelvin, but he didn't realize it's a superfluid. 3 years later, he discovered superconductivity in metals with this technique. So he found the resistivity jumps down to zero at about 4.2 Kelvin. And this won him the Nobel Prize in 1913. So superfluid is discovered again in 1938 by Capizza and another two Canadian physicists, Allen and Meissner. And so they discover the fluid is some flow without friction, and there is no energy loss and a persistent flow in the liquid, and the liquid doesn't want to rotate. And it's very similar to superconductor, which is current without resistance, and the same as no energy loss, and it has persistent current, and it will expel magnetic field. And so in 1987, Muller and Bernold, they have increased the transition temperature of superconductor to be very high, and this won them the second Nobel Prize on superconductor. So in 1957, Bardeen and Cooper and Scriffer, they developed a theory called a BCS theory now. It's about how two electrons form a Cooper pair, and then these two electrons will travel together in the solid to this explain a lot of phenomena at that time. So, and the day picture is, as you see here, okay. So the electron travels very fast in the solid, so it will attract the negative ions around him, but it moves fast to another place here, and the lattice distortion is left behind. So another electron came in, and it can feel the attraction by the negative ions. So this can cause an effective attraction between two electrons. And in the normal superconductor, the Cooper pair, the electron in the Cooper pair, their distance is very large, about 100 nanometer, while the lattice spacing is about 0.1 nanometer. So this distance is about 1,000 times the lattice spacing. And so Bernold and Muller, they discovered a high temperature superconductor. So at that time, it's about 35 Kelvin, about absolute zero. And the record today is about 138 in the cuprates. So in their Nobel Prize lecture, they mentioned they were stimulated by the idea that if an electron and the surrounding lattice distortion with a high effective mass can travel through the lattice as a whole, and a strong electron lattice coupling exists, an insulator could be turned into a high temperature superconductor. So that's the motivation for our study on the electron lattice interaction. We basically look at three representative kinds of electron lattice interaction. First is the Hoenstein type. Basically, it just modifies the onset energy of the electron. And the second is the Frohlich type. It's kind of like a long range or non local Hoenstein type electron lattice coupling. And the third kind is the Su-Scriver-Higger type, which modifies the Hopping integral of the electron to hop between nearest neighbor side. This is due to when the lattice are vibrating, the overlap of the wave function is also changing. So how do we model this? Basically, if you look at the Hoenstein model, it consists of two parts. One is the kinetic energy part, one is the potential energy part. So the kinetic energy part is like the hopping. It can be the nearest neighbor hopping or next nearest neighbor hopping. Here, I only show with nearest neighbor hopping in two dimensions. You can see the Fermi surface is look like this. And in the center is the low density limit. And at this line, you can see it's near half filling. So this is most of interest to us. And the potential energy will look like you hand a highway mass to a spring, and it will bring the spring to a new equilibrium. This is a classical picture. But in a quantum picture, it becomes more complicated. So at each side, you can have infinite number of phonons, because phonons, they are bosons. So they can have a large number of any phonon configuration in the lattice. And so this is what we see in our simulations. So at weak electron phonon coupling, it's a small effective mass for the electron. And this is look like the BCS limit. And the phonon function is short range. So as you increase the coupling, you can see the phonon wave function become long range, and the effective mass is very large. And this is the this is the crossover region, which is the most difficult part in a numerical simulation. And at strong coupling, one would naively thought the phonon function become more and more long range, but that's not the case. So when coupling become very strong, the wave function actually they collapse into very short range wave function, and with many phonons on the same side. This is look like the BEC limit with two electron with opposite spin on the same side. This has very large effect mass, and it's called a small polaron or bipolaron. So what does effective mass mean to us? So in classical system, if you increase effective mass, you can change the band curvature to a more flat one. If you decrease the effect mass, you can change the band structure to a sharper one. And in the Dirac system, if you change the effect mass, you can change the Berry curvature, and you can have the band closed and then reopened with the band inverted. And in a superconductor system, if you study the effect mass of two electrons, you can see like if the two electrons form a pair, if it's the effective mass become less, it's a kinetic energy driven pairing. This is thought as an unconventional superconductor. Well, in the BCS theory, it's actually the potential energy which is lowered. So the effective mass become heavier when two electrons form a pair. So because the phonon bosons, so there are infinite Hilbert space in this system. So the method we are using is first, we use wave function renormalization group. And second, we use some ANSARs. And third, maybe we use a low energy effective theory to solve this system. This is the method we have used. It's basically to diagonalize a very large matrix. It starts from an initial state, and you can apply the Hamiltonian to the initial state. You can generate more and more different configurations. So the traditional method, if you don't do any refinement, they will converge very slow. And it almost, you see at a very large number of states, 10 to the power 7, you still not get converged. But our refinement is we use the strong coupling stage, which they have the a large number of phonons as a coherent state. And then we start from that, we apply Hamiltonian, and for several runs, we get very good accuracy in the ground state energy, as you see in the red line. And there's another limit called Abaqi limit. It's also very difficult region for the numerical things. So for this region, we design a specific method which we first get convergence, and then we change the parameters by a small amount, and then we delay some states and include some new states, and then we see it's converged or not. If it's yes, we go to a new parameter. If not, we run several times in this area, and then we also get convergence in this difficult region. So the at the back limit is so exact at the back limit is easier to solve because the electron and the phonon, they decouple, and you can obtain electron function, and then you get wave function of phonons from electrons. But near the at the back limit, there are two disparate energy scales, so it becomes very hard to solve this electron plus phonon wave function. And so we also look at the Suess-Krieger model, which is used to describe electron-phonon coupling in polymers. And but 10 years earlier, in the area of superconductivity, three guys, Barasik, Labbe, and Frédère, they also developed a same model. So in this talk, I will say SSH, but also BLF model. So what's the difference between SSH model and the normal Hornstein model? So first, they modify the Hopping term, T. And second, they're using acoustic phonons instead of optic phonons. So acoustic phonon is more general because it exists in all material, while optic phonon only exists in material with two or more different kinds of atoms. But roughly, you can think acoustic phonon is like many optical phonons with very small Einstein frequency. And so we found a different behavior in the Debye limit. The SSH model will diverge as 1 over omega, while the Hornstein model will diverge as 1 over square root of omega. This is in one dimension. In 2 and 3D, they are basically same trend. And also, there are an euro trend between effect mass and the spectral weight. In SSH, the effect mass proportional to the spectral weight. Well, for Hornstein coupling, the effect mass proportional to inverse of the spectral weight. So then we jump to something. This is second part of my talk, which is recently work on graphene-based optic things. Because the motivation is we want to make light go in the designed way as we like. So we need to study the optical conductivity of different layers like a monolayer, bilayer graphene, or MOS2. So as you see here, the there's Pauli exclusion principles in the optical system. If you have both, if you have electrons in the valence band and empty space at the conduction band, you can have the optical transition happen. Well, if you are from empty states to empty states, this is forbidden. So what's the difference between graphene and MOS2? So graphene is gapless with high mobility and Dirac equation. And the spin valley is degenerate in graphene. Well, in MOS2, there is large band gap of order of 1.8 eV. This is in the visible light region. So this is good for transistor or and also sensitive to the solar energy. Also, the Dirac equation become gapped for this material, and the spin valley become polarized. So there are two major applications of this material. For example, in a transistor, or recently MIT, they developed some solar energy funnels to collect solar energy using this material. So this is their band structure. You see their gap, Dirac fermions with spin up and spin down polarized in the valence band. So there is some work on the optical selection rule for a circular polarized light. First, the people consider the optical magnetic moment in different valleys. They are rotating in a different way. So by this, they conceive optical selection rule. So for K valley, they select one kind of circular polarized light. For K prime valley, they select a different one. And we look at optical conductivity. We found the conductivity for different polarized light is also drastically different. As you see here, the black line is for sigma plus. It's for example, lefter circular polarized. But for another circular polarized, you can almost see nothing, so there's no conductivity for another for right-hand circular polarized light. And And we also look at the phonon structure in this system. So for the Dirac fermions with a small gap, and we see there are four kinks in the RPES data. So there are strong correlation between these two lower these two energy scale at 7.5 and minus 12.5. So, and you can see a large picture here. There's a strong correlation effect in this region. And we apply this this method to study another two gapped system, MOS2 and the silicene, and we found there's also similar kinks in the density of states. Well, in the silicene system, they are almost they are same kinks, but also one thing is the gap become renormalized, and you see for some parameter region the gap almost closed in the middle, and the silicene is has a similar band structure, but the difference is in the valence band, in the conduction band, they also spin when the valley polarized. Well, for MOS2, the conduction band is degenerate. So we started something about the surface conductivity of 3D topological insulator, and we found the conductivity is going like sublinearly instead of a flat line in graphene. So the band structure is very similar to graphene. They are both Dirac fermions, but the difference is for topological insulator, they have the warping term. So the Fermi surface becomes like a hexagonal instead of a circle. So this makes the density of states will going down, as you see the red line, the blue line, compared to a linear increasing. Surprisingly, the conductivity didn't burn down. Instead, they burn up with different warping parameter. And this different warping parameter, these different lines, they do not scale onto each other. So you can not just the time factor to get the different lines from the first one. So also recently we started the H transport of 2D topological insulator. So 5 minutes? Okay. Okay. So this is the above picture is for a band insulator. There is a zero spin hole conductivity, but non-zero valley hole conductivity. So the blue one is electron from valley K, and the red one represent electron from valley K prime. And by change the gap for one kind of electron, for example, if you have phonons, and then one can, for example, spin down electron from valley K prime, the gap for this kind of charge carrier can be closed, and then they reopen with the band inverted. And this will reverse the direction how this kind of electron travel in the on the edge. So you see here this electron travel to the right, but in the bottom you see this kind of electron travel to the left. And by this change you can have a phase transition from a band insulator to a topological insulator, which has a non-zero spin hole conductivity, but with a zero valley hole conductivity. So then we show here a phase diagram from the churn number. So in this system, because spin and the valley, they are not degenerated, so they also have a spin churn number and a valley churn number. So in this picture, we show how different phases emerge as you change the temperature and also the external electric field. So you can see there are banding indolator here, and topological indolator in this region, then banding indolator again. And in this small region, you also see the topological indolator. So you can see a lot of crossover due to temperature. But this is based on a churn number. So if you look at the spin hole and the valley hole, because of the temperature, this churn number will be smeared out. And so you cannot see very sharp transition from one churn number to another, but you can still see some imprint. As I show here, I take the face boundary from this plot to add it to this one. So you can see they still follow this churn number classification, but you will have a different very smeared feature. But you can still see from the spin hole change from a positive value to a negative value, which is here from -1 to 1. So they generally they obey this churn number. And also we see the optic conductivity, they are very different for if you have both band indolator here with a -1 valley chain and the 1 valley chain. So for these two, they are both band indolator, but the valley chain number is different. And you can see for 1 valley chain, the system will preferentially absorb one kind of circular polarized light, which is the right line. And at high temperature, it will absorb another kind of circular polarized light. So the selection rule become modified by these topological crossovers. So this is my summary. We have studied classical Dirac fermions coupled to phonon as the Higgs boson, and we see various phenomena emerge. And thanks.
We have time for questions. Okay, if not, let's thank the speaker again and